why does the Ameritron keep kicking offline? Let me give an American whistle. Yeah, it's showing some upward rise. Seems like VOA cap is letting us down. The propagation isn't nearly what I had hoped it to be. Back to you, my feathered friend.
Yeah, okay, N2IRJ, WB4AIO, WB4 Aeschylus Icarus Oedipus. Okay, yeah, your signal is moderately okay, not real strong. Hold on a second. I think I'm only transmitting in 4 kilohertz. Let me correct that.
I'm in 4 kilohertz also. I could go to 5. Here goes.
No, I'm going to 7.5. This is 7.5 kilohertz. I'm not fooling around.
My God, you're a man without fear.
I think your amp just knocked itself offline again.
It has been infected doing that. I don't know why. Oh, did it again. Oh, man. Hold on. Maybe it doesn't like the Henrietta settings or something. Henrietta's barely moving up. Hello? My power is way down. Just when I need it the most, the 7. I am seeing a problem. The Ameritron immediately kicks offline. Let me check.
Hello?
Seems to be a loose connection to one of those terminals going in, but the overload light keeps coming on. It keeps kicking offline. Now it's offline again.
Yeah, if you've got a loose connection, I guess that could explain why you're getting false overloads. In addition to a bad connection, maybe the tuning of the Henrietta is not proper. I know that if the final stage in the Henry amplifier is not resonated properly, then the impedance at the cathode may not be what it's supposed to be, and that may be causing SWR overloads on that part of the circuit. Don't know, though. I'm just speculating. N2IRJ, WB4AIO.
Yes, I have awareness of that. It seems to be kicking off immediately. Henrietta hasn't changed before you came here. All was well. Let me,
go back.
Henrietta doesn't want to put out power. Something happened to Henrietta. What the heck could have happened? Hello? It's like the tuning's all weird. Hello? Well, that's weird. Hello? Let me do a whistle. That is weird. The power's real low, like it's out of tune. I don't get it. It was tuned up before a half an hour ago, and now it's changed dramatically.
Maybe your connector is bad. Yeah, maybe the connector is bad on the 217, the one you recently put on.
Huh, If so, this is the first. Hello, there are my powers way down again. Let me check the Meritron. A Meritron is claiming that all is well. It's Henrietta that's screwed up. Let me try to tune up with a carrier. One moment, please. Okay, here's my stopgap solution, which I really don't like. I am bypassing the Ameritron. The Ameritron just won't stay online, and I'm just running the Henry directly with increased power from the flex. Of course, you know, that's not going to do much. Let me do a whistle. It's piss poor. I could try tuning up a little better. And want me to do that? I'll try. Here it goes.
Yeah, your signal is not very strong, Marty. I don't know what to tell you. It's kind of weak right now. I'm understanding your words, but every time there's a little line noise or something that comes on, I lose a few words, and there is an intermittent line noise. So both the propagation gods and the gods of the of your equipment are conspiring against us. Don't know what to say about that. I hope you get everything fixed. I don't know what the problem could be. Is the Henrietta tuning up far, far away from the settings you had a few minutes ago, or is the Henrietta tuning up in more or less the same spot? Over.
More or less the same spot. Hello? Oh, there's still hardly any power going on in Henrietta. Let me do a whistle. Now it's... Oh, wait a minute. I take it back. Hold on. Actually, it's okay. Henrietta's okay. It's something going on with Ameritron. And here's how I know. What I was looking at a moment ago when I thought it was putting out no power, the Henrietta, it was reflected power. I thought maybe something went wrong with the antenna. There was big viswar. But that's not the problem. The problem seems to be focused right on the Ameritron amplifier.
You said something about a loose connection. What's that all about?
That's news to me. You know those two wires that go into the remote control head? If I wiggle them, the light goes off and it goes dead. And even if I don't do that, the overload light comes on when I key up. It's been doing that for a couple weeks before LibertyNet's even. I get it set, I go to transmit, and then my power would be down. I'd look and the overload light was on.
Huh. Well, maybe you ought to redo all of those connections. Are they screw terminal connections? Are they solder connections? What are they?
They're sort of like phone jack connections.
You mean it's like a quarter-inch phone jack?
Yes.
Well, maybe you ought to take apart the connector and see if any of the terminals are shorting, or if there's an intermittent, like a wire that's broken that's intermittently making contact, and if the solder joint is cold, you know, and investigate all that and see if there's anything you can find that physically could make the connection go bad. Oh, wow, there's a big wind that's moving my curtain against the screen. That's really weird. Now it's gone. I had a gust of wind that came through the whole house. Oh, anyway, investigate the connections and see what's going on, and maybe you can figure out the problem. It'd be good to figure it out before the next net.
That's for sure. I'll have to institute an investigation of FCC caliber.
Yeah, you could stand to have a lot more bass response, by the way. You sound sort of thin.
Well, that can be rectified. Although I don't know if the switch can be. It might be the switch, it might be the wire. I'm having a heck of a note here. I don't know if you heard my recording. It was really messing up for me last night. Speaking of that recording, maybe you could send me yours. Perhaps you already have. Checked a half hour ago, wasn't there on FileZilla, but maybe it is by now. I'll put in more bass just a moment. Whenever I go to ESSB, and that's 5 kilohertz or above, that's what I need to turn to grip up to the 12-meter position on bass. How's this sound compared to before?
I'm going to wait for your signal to come up because you were competing with the line noise that time. But I'll preliminarily say it sounds better, but right now I want to wait for a peak in your signal strength.
Well, then I'll take this as an opportunity to chat about items on my mind. My CPDR, I turned up the microphone just a smidgen, and I'm ever so slightly exceeding zero, so that might be sinful. You might tell me to cut it back, but if it's sounding good to you, that's cool, but then again, conditions aren't all that good, so the nuances might be missed. Last night's the Survival Net, I participated in the last half, chatted with Vic, Sayman, ROQ with an N4 in front. I think there's another guy getting several other people. I kept having a horrible problem with my transmit receive switch. It got so bad it was keying up and wouldn't unkey, it was short circuited. Finally, I yanked on hard enough and did it right in a proper way. And then from that point on, I just had used the software keying button, the MOX. And I fought with it this morning a lot, and it's sort of working a little, but it's real touchy. If I move it the wrong way, it stays keyed up permanently, and it's driving me nuts. So I do plan on taking that apart today, too, to try to find out what the mystery is. You know, the switch seems to be fine, and the wire seems to be fine, but I've got a switch between the two terminals of the switch. Put it back together again, and it was messed up again. When the switch is outward, it seems to work. When I screw it into its receptacle, then all hell breaks loose. I mean, between it and the Ameritron, I swear, there is a conspiracy here, N2IRJ.
WB4AIO. Well, maybe what you should do is take the switch out so you can see the terminals, and then somehow insulate the terminals with a layer or two of shrink wrap, and put some shrink wrap around both terminals, and that way when the switch goes inside of the housing, it will be impossible for it to to make for the two terminals to make contact with one another, which is possibly what's happening. The two terminals are being pushed together, so they're making intermittent contact with each other. But if you insulate them, maybe that will become impossible. Anyway, that's what I would try. And I don't hear any ill effects from you going slightly over zero, but what happens with the Flex software is if you go over 0 dB on the Compander, that it will trigger ALC action, and ALC action will actually reduce your power briefly for like a quarter of a second by a few dB. And so you really don't gain anything in loudness by going above zero. The best thing is to have your processing adjusted, the external processing and the gain adjusted, so that it goes right up to 0 dB, and it could even hit the line, that's okay. But it shouldn't go above it very often, because when you go above it, it will initiate ALC action, and ALC action is hurts your average power a little bit, not a lot. Probably the guy on the other end would not notice it too much, but as far as being a purist is concerned, it's probably better just to hold it at 0 dB all the time. N2IRJ WB4AIO.
To 18, and on the analog it's ever so slightly overshooting the zero, but it's now reading 0 dB on the above digital readout, whereas before it was hitting a plus one. I guess you maybe would want me to crank it back even a tad more. It seems like there's a difference. When I'm up on 3.5 kilohertz of transmit bandwidth, I need to run it up to 19 to hit a zero. Maybe my software is still corrupted from the past and I need to re-import an old database or something and start over again now that I have the pyramid on my side.
Yeah, maybe so. I think you should run your base where it is now all the time. It sounds much better. It's far from excessive. It's actually still a little light on base, but it's much, much better than it was before. Here's how you're sounding. Thanks.
And I need to re-import an old database or something and start over again now that I have the pyramid on my side.
So there you go. That's how you're sounding. As you can hear, your audio quality sounds decent, but the signal to noise is not that great. WB4AIO.
Yeah, I need Ameritron back on my side. It sounds pleasing to me, too, on your replay. Speaking of all that, I want to tell you that Audacity is fighting me more and more each week. I end up having to go to bed and get back up because it's swirling around saying not responding. You know, if I want to do the smallest maneuver with it, it locks up and spins around and around not responding. If I dare ask it to normalize or anything that takes a little bit more stress, it really freaks out. Or it likes also when I try to close an Audacity window, I want to save it, you know, I want to exit out top right. It just spins around and around and waits and says, not responding. And I've had probably about six computer reboots since it decided to take on this new action.
That's not normal. Do you have just one Audacity window open, or do you have several Audacity windows open?
Doesn't mean 10. And here's what you sound like.
That's not normal. Do you have just one Audacity window open, or do you have several Audacity windows open? Okay. Well, two really shouldn't stress the computer too much. I don't know. I would suspect that somehow or other your Audacity program has gotten corrupted. Maybe from past episodes of having high RF in the shack. And it might be worthwhile, and it certainly can't hurt anything, to reinstall Audacity. Just go to SourceForge, make sure you're getting it from SourceForge, and download a copy of the very latest version of Audacity. Probably has some bug fixes and updates in it anyway. And just install that, and basically it will reinstall all your core files, and you'll be able to at least see if a corrupted program file is the source of your weird behavior.
Well, that sounds good on paper, but you might recall Laura wanted to get Audacity. She tried downloading it herself, and that turned out to be a nightmare. And her claim is that the new Audacity has some kind of plug-in to be compliant with RIAA or something, and it limits her abilities. She can't do the same things I can.
No, I don't believe that. That would not be true.
I'll have to grill her some more and put her in touch with you, because I'll be damned if I'm going to be controlled like that. But if I can make things better, I'm all for it. Maybe there's some way we could save this version on my backup hard drive. We could do a whole backup and save it, and then import this new one, and if the new one turns out to be controlled, then we could revert back to my corrupted one, even which is not controlled. I'll just deal with the spinning around, I guess.
Yeah, it's not controlled. She just didn't install the MP3 encoder or something. That's always separate because of licensing issues. You have to install, you may recall you had to do it. You have to install the MP3 encoder separately. That's all.
Oh, good. I'll have you help me through that. Or wait until you come out here. It's not the world's biggest emergency, but little things are creeping in. There's the Audacity problem. There's my Switch King problem. Now there's the Ameritron problem. And here's the last problem I want to discuss with you. Toothpaste. Am I turning into be a fogey? I'm starting to smack my lips and have saliva, and it's because of the tooth pain hurting me so much. So that's the root cause. If I fix that, I won't have the secondary problem, but I'll speak of it. Here's the secondary problem. It shows up on the recordings, and it's embarrassing for starters, but apart from that, it's getting even worse. Here's the problem. It makes these real high frequency peaks, these spikes. So when I make the recording sent to you, it gets normalized to an exceedingly low level because my spikes are so damn hot when I talk on recording. It's okay, it's normal. I have not touched anything on the Apex, the CRL, the Behringer. So the only change that has been made in recent months is the addition of the MXL990. The problem might have started clear back then, and I just didn't get all that concerned about it till now. But sometimes, like this last recording I sent you, it looks like one of your recordings. The net is only up to about a 0.5 in amplitude, and I'm the one with the peaks, hitting digital zero almost. Of course, I have it normalized to a negative 0.1 decibel, but still, I don't like it. Maybe you can come to the rescue there. This is N2IRJ.
I don't know. Maybe the clipper has failed in the CRL, and the CRL is not clipping your peaks anymore. That would cause a problem like that. I don't know. Normally, the clipper and the Aphex and the clipper and the CRL should be such perfect instantaneous limiters, you shouldn't get much overshoot at all. But by the way, hitting 0.5 is fine. That's 0.5 is minus 6. Even without recording my voice, just recording over-the-air conversations, I find that having the loudest stations peak at 0.5, which is minus 6 dB, that's about right to make sure that static crashes and other intermittent noises don't clip. So that's actually normal.
I think I'm going to continue doing it this way. I noticed your recordings sound quieter in terms of static compared to mine, at least much of the time. Oh, by the way, speaking of static and reception, I'm receiving you on the Pyramid. I tried on the Beverage initially, and the signal-to-noise ratio is actually much worse. So I'm needing, I guess, a vertical component locally. This Pyramid is just magical for getting the northeast quarter and even down into the south a bit and midway in across the country. It seems the Beverage comes on strong from the Midwest past California into Asia, VK land, all those places. That's where it really excels. You wouldn't believe the slow scan TV images I can pull out from those regions across the Pacific Ocean, but even for United States. The Beverage is actually too good.
get more stateside. It's already low to the ground, kind of. What else do I want to say? Oh, I want to give you a treat of yourself. Here goes.
The Clipper has failed in the CRL. And the CRL is not clipping your peeps anymore. That would cause a problem like that. I don't know. Normally, the Clipper and the Apex and the Clipper and the CRL should be such perfect instantaneous limiters, you shouldn't get much overshoot at all. But by the way, hitting 0.5 is fine. That 0.5 is minus 6. Even with just recording over-the-air conversations, I find that having a lot of space to speak before it starts to handle 260 dB, that's about right to make sure that static crashes and other intermittent noises don't clip. So that's actually normal.
And to our Jay back, and I'll have you know, the CRL, as I speak and as you speak, it's flashing the light, the orange light on the front here, right over that sort of over.
Yeah, okay, well, it looks like it's operating normally, but maybe there is a problem. I really do not know. Or maybe you have your highs boosted so much in the Behringer, you're boosting the highs so much that it's creating a... an overshoot condition that the low pass filter in the recording software can't deal with it, and it's creating some high frequency overshoot. Because recording at 22050, of course, limits your high frequency response, and if you're trying to force frequencies that are beyond 10 kilohertz or so through a 22050 sample rate recording, occasionally you will get high frequency overshoots. So maybe it's a matter of excessive high frequencies. I don't know. I have to think about it. I have to determine whether the Clipper's working. I really have to be there. So I don't really know what's happening with those intermittent transients that are higher level than the rest of your voice. By the way, you will not have to reinstall the MP3 encoder. I believe that you can update Audacity and not lose the MP3 encoder you've already installed. So the updating Audacity to the latest version will not affect your ability to export MP3s, and you will not have to reinstall the program. Your signal is starting to QSB below the noise level occasionally. I did get some of the recording you played back to me, but I didn't get all of it because there were a couple of places where you sort of faded down to where the signal-to-noise ratio was in 0 dB or maybe even negative decibels territory. And to IRJ, WB4AIO.
Wow, that's something. That means I'm receiving you better with the pyramid than you're receiving me. And I'm putting out nearly a kilowatt. Well, really I am. So we're pretty well balanced there. How about that? That's interesting. Well, on this transmission, perk up your ears. I need changes. Everything is going to be 2,000 to 4,000 now, but I don't want to ruin my sparkliness. It's an experiment. I can put it back the way it was. But yeah, I am thrashing it up against the end. Speaking of that, not last night's recording, but the one before that, which was the LibertyNet. In the very beginning, there was a little bit of bleed through. Why? Because NISA prompted me to inch up the 2 Skype, one notch, and then another notch, whatever they are in. I don't know what increments. I'd have to look and see. But it's just a tiny amount, like an eighth of an inch. That was enough to get me in trouble. It's a little less than half scale up. That's as good as it gets. I go beyond that, I am screwed. And I just cannot tolerate this high audio frequency input. I have to give her to please her. I already told her everything you said for me to tell her. And basically, I really do need to make changes here because it's so torturous to try to do a whole internet. Up and down, up and down with the controls. And I plus have to do 2 buttons to boot. And then if I just try to marginally hear by turning down the Sony speakers, not only can I barely hear, but the shape, you know, who comes through is really strong. And then if it's up a little too high, guess what? Skype gives me a warning. Except this echo, and then it starts to grow. Everything just keeps looping around in a conundrum and makes my life hell. Can't feel like I'm dead.
Well, I think, number one, I think you should refuse to turn that two Skype up that high. You should just refuse to do it. And secondly, you can change the level of the receiver in your own ears. You can change the level of the receiver in your own ears by adjusting that in the headphones, I mean, not in the speakers, but you can change the level of the LibertyNet audio in your own ears by adjusting the pot on the Behringer that is the audio from the Flex. I forget how it's labeled, but it's the audio from the Flex. And just by turning that pot up or down, no matter what you've done for Nyssa, you can turn that pot up or down to affect the volume in your own ears. In other words, if the volume in the headphones is too high from the Flex, just turn that pot down on the Behringer. And that the purpose of that that pot on the Behringer is strictly for your own ears in the headphone. The setting of that pot, the setting of that pot on the Behringer does not affect the recording at all. It also does not affect your transmitting at all. It only affects what you hear in your headphones. So feel free to adjust that downward so you can hear Nyssa better in your headphones. WB4AIO.
You just provided a perfect short-term solution to the problem. I was compensating in the wrong direction. I was making it louder. In fact, it's just about maxed out. And that makes hardly any difference between Nyssa's level and the LibertyNet. In fact, it's worse than that. The LibertyNet is about four times louder. So when Nyssa talks, I can't hear her. It's hell. So I guess the solution is for me to pot up the SDR higher so Nyssa can hear, but plot down the RX. I know which one you're speaking of, and then I'll be able to hear a better balance of Nyssa and that. That would be the short-term solution. Of course, eventually, if you do your resistor modification method, that will be icing on the cake, but for now, this will be a half-decent workaround. I don't like having to drive the Flex that hard because it gets into non-linearity when you start pushing up near, you know, the top 1/3 or 50% or less audio frequency into IRJ.
Yeah, well, that pot from the Flex on the Behringer, that doesn't affect your transmitting at all. It doesn't affect the recording at all. The only thing that it affects is what you hear in your headphones. That's all it affects.
In that case, it's going to help immensely, and it'll just be icing on the cake when you get here and do the resistor change. It won't be all urgent like it has been. I've been getting driven nuts by all this, especially when it goes full loop and then Skype starts punishing me because of excessive echo. By the way, my CPDR right now is ever so slightly exceeding the zero with the microphonium at 18 setting, but the digital readout is saying that it's zero. In other words, it's not going up to a +1 digitally speaking on the readout like it was when I had the mic at 19. So is that okay, or should I actually crank it back even more to 17? Over.
Well, I think you can leave it where it is. That's probably pretty good. I don't think you have any problem. And it sounds good. I don't notice any reduction in treble, so your setting was that the adjustment you just made has not hurt you, the quality of your audio. In fact, it sounds reasonably high fidelity right now.
Under that damn button of mine, the transmit button, it was fighting me there. It seems like the switch is a little bit bad. It doesn't want to stick sometimes. Maybe the fault really is in there. It's not wiring. And by the way, I did that method, not with heat shrinkable tubing that would have required desoldering the terminal, but I completely encapsulated it with electrical tape many times, both of them. And then I inserted it, and it messed up on me. Then I took it back out, and they were still perfectly insulated. So I said, damn, somehow they must have secretly touched. So I did it again and put it in. And again, guess what? Second time around, same thing. I said, screw this. I just wasted at least 3 hours. And it worked for a little while, and it got so bad last night I could barely get through the survival net. Over.
Well, if they're not touching, and if you're sure that the solder joints are not cold, and if you're sure that the wire near the joint has not broken inside the insulation, if you're sure of all of those things, then the only thing that's left is the switch is bad, and you just need to buy a new switch. So start looking for a new switch, or if you don't know how to find one, give me the specs, and I'll see if I can find one.
I wish I could get the same exact switch. I love these switches. They're real easy to push, and, you know, they push and hold, and I push it again, and they release. It's really a neat switch. I know where I purchased it, if that's any help. I know exactly where I purchased it. Electronic Gold Mine. Electronic Gold Mine. If they still have them, that would be great. It's been about 15 years, but these things were so ubiquitous, they might still be around. But I don't know the part number.
Okay. Electronic Gold Mine. Well, I don't know. That, I could be wrong, of course, but that sounds like one of those outlets that just gets closeouts and surplus from other companies, and probably does. It's sort of like Big Lots or Ollie's. They don't really have a regular stock. They just get whatever they can get at the lowest prices from surplus or closeouts or discontinued items. I could be wrong, but that's what it sounds like. So might have to examine the switch and see if there's a manufacturer's name on it or even a part number. These days with Google, you know, all you have to do is put in a part number, and the chances are you'll find out what the manufacturer is pretty quick just with a simple search. WB4AIO.
Real cheap price is really neat stuff. You know, high voltage capacity. You know, kits, you know, to make ultrasonic devices, and you name it. Just all, it was like a Ramsey of sorts, except far more parts. Not as many kits, but tons of parts, real cheap parts, and seemingly decent.
Yeah, I remember seeing their advertisements. I don't believe I ever purchased anything from them, but since my electronic activities have been not as intense in recent years, I've sort of lost track with a lot of the manufacturers and companies that are out there, so I don't even know if they're in business. By the way, the honeysuckle just started blooming this morning, and I see the little white blossoms outside my window. It looks really, really pretty. Over.
Up fully now, and the yellow pollen, I guess, should go away over a 2-week period. I think that's what was affecting the allergies out here. There's little green yellow pollen, but probably by now they are all out because the leaves have sprouted. And also, my Henrietta really needs to be changed based upon the weather. I thought I could get a certain perfect setting and just go from net to net. It seems like I really should touch it up every net. It changes a little. And I noticed sometimes when it rains, it needs a little less loading on the antenna. But on today's tune-up, I actually decreased the tuning side of the plate, you know, and it's one because I'm running it less hard. If I had the Ameritron on my side and I could run it harder, then it takes a little more, a bit more on that side, a little bit more inductance. N2IRJ.
Yeah. By the way, I was going through that material. I found quite a few pictures of your dad, and I saved them. There were some pictures that were totally destroyed by being in the moist garage. I had to throw quite a few pictures away, but I nevertheless was able to save quite a few of them that had pictures of your dad. So I think you'll be pleased to see those. And also, I found his driver's license. Over.
Well, I'm glad you did. Is it the one with holes punched in it? When he died, that was one of the first things the pigs did. They flushed his drugs down the toilet, and then they punched holes in his driver's license so no one else could use it.
That shows you what they're really concerned about. Yeah, no, I don't believe there are any holes punched in it. It's a little damaged by moisture. It's a little damaged, but it's still quite legible.
Memorabilia from there. He really wanted to wipe out the war memories. Damn shame. Or when she had her yard sale, maybe the neighbors cleaned me out of that. They cleaned me out of all of these antique tools of my grandfather's that I had stored there. They were my tools. So I trusted my dad. Of course, he dies, and she takes over, the bitch woman, and then she had a yard sale for a few bucks she made. And that really hurt me badly to lose those hand-crank drills and items from the 1800s, which were in perfect condition. The wood was perfect. I'm really glad you got those photos. There's one photo I was thinking of last night. I was hoping you'd stumble across, but the odds of this are pretty slim. It's a photograph of me. I was perhaps 4 years old, and it was taken in Johnstown on a steep hill in Minersville. I guess that wouldn't mean anything to you, but back in those days, Uncle Bernard had a Volkswagen Type 1 sedan. I think it was a 1960. It had 32 horsepower. I remember that. He took us up there with his camera. He was somewhat of an experienced photographer back then, having really neat gear like what's available today to ordinary people. But anyway, he photographed me holding my red pet lobster. It wasn't a real lobster. It was a stuffed child's toy. But anyway, I'm holding my lobster there with a wooden fence in the background, like a farmer's barbed wire fence, you know. It was a beautifully staged shot. My Uncle Bernard does have some abilities. That was a beautiful photo. And my father had it on display for over 35 years on his bureau, his desk, by his bed. Even when he lived where you are now, it was there on display. He remembered me by that. Over the years, it faded some. Geez, by now, probably the red lobster looks black and white. But boy, it was really a nice photo. You could have seen me back then when it all began. Thank you, IRJ.
Okay, and to IRJ, WB4AIO. I did not see that particular photograph, but I did see some pictures of you and Laura as adults. But young adults, you look a little bit different than you do today, and so I preserve those also. And there are some tools. There's an old hand axe, a short hand axe. There's some old-looking screwdrivers and wrenches, and there is a hand-operated drill also. So maybe one of those is what you're looking for, or maybe it's a later hand-operated drill and not the antique one. I don't know, but I did preserve the old tools also. I did not dispose of any of those. They are preserved. Here's a recording of yourself. Your signal is pretty poor recently, but you had a brief surge in signal strength, a brief surge during the last transmission, so I'll let you hear what you sounded like at that point. And your audio still sounds like it's mostly, you know, an emphasis on the mid-range and highs. But the lows are better than they were before you made your adjustment. But it's still very, very bright and no problem with excessive bass. In fact, I would like to hear even more. Anyway, here's how it's sounding.
Perhaps 4 years old, and it was taken in Johnstown on a steep hill in Minersville. I guess that wouldn't mean it.
Oops, I accidentally pressed the wrong button. Stand by. Let me try again.
Perhaps 4 years old. and it was taken in Johnstown on a steep hill in Minersville. I guess that wouldn't mean anything to you, but back in those days, Uncle Bernard had a Volkswagen Type 1 sedan. I think it was a 1960. It had 32 horsepower. I remember that. He took us up there with his camera. He was somewhat of an experienced photographer back then, having really neat gear like what's available today to ordinary people. But anyway, he photographed me holding my red pet lobster.
So there you go, N2IRJWB4AIO. The band is not really favoring us right now, but during the beginning part of that recording, you were stronger than most of the time. Over.
That was a helpful playback. And I agree, on that playback, there was insufficient bass. However, I'm going to wait until propagation's better to make the evaluation on the bass. But I think I still need to crank it back when I go to 3.5 kilohertz. It gets to be excessive for the inferiors. Oh, jeez. And maybe I should crank back my microphonium on 3.5 to the 18 setting here. I put it up on 19. In fact, it seems I can put it up to anything almost, and it just stays at zero CPDR. Remember how it used to do that? Unless that was on the microphone where it wouldn't go up any higher. It required re-importing a database. But if it's corrupted, I thought it was corrupted across the board. In other words, it would mess over 7,500 kilohertz just the same as it would 3.5 kilohertz. So maybe I could just decrease it back again up there. It's at 19, and maybe I should bring it back to 18. Over.
Well, it is sounding good, so if there is anything wrong, I can't detect it at this end. Sounding pretty good. I think I'm going to get off the radio, though. The propagation is going to fade out on us, and the line noise is coming in and out, and it's good to talk to you. I hope you solve your Ameritron problem. I don't really know what that could be. I mean, if the amplifier, the final amplifier, is tuned up properly, it should be reflecting a reasonable impedance back to the solid-state IPA, and I guess you could just put a carrier on and go in the other room and actually look at the SWR that the Ameritron is seeing. And if that's not the problem, then heck, I don't know what it is. Check those connections. Spray some CRC cleaner on the connection that seems intermittent on that remote head, and see if that makes a difference. And beyond that, I'd hate to think of sending the thing back, but maybe it does have some intermittent problem internally, WB4AIO.
I hate the thought of sending it back, too. Well, I'll do just that. Just before this QSO, in fact, when it's first started, that's the first it ever started losing its light, the light for the meter on the remote head. This is a whole new problem. Preceding it was this cutting out and hitting the overload, you know? So I will investigate it with a carrier. And boy, I sure hope it's not an instantaneous failure in the Ameritron. I don't want to have to send it back. But I'm going to have to get it back. Okay. Hey, before you go, you mentioned certain chain stores where I mentioned electronic gold mine. What do you think would be a good store for me to search for a properly priced refrigerator if that eventuality has to come to pass? I went downstairs a little while ago and noticed that Laura, to my utter amazement, I didn't think she knew how to operate the electronics. She overrode the standard settings in the digital input there and displayed as maximum cooling for the refrigerator and maximum cooling for the freezer to boot, because the control is separately, and basically that'll run it as down as hard and as cold as possible. It's not advised if a red warning light comes on. You know, there are other lights too, blue alerts, yellow alerts, things like that, but she did that, and it is cold in both places, but it might have been sort of like just whipping a lame horse if the compressor. You know, I've seen this before in cut specifically in my Amana window air conditioner, the one I like so much to use for 7 years. Hole where the insulation surrounding was. Well, anyway, that one started getting this way where it wouldn't cool, and then it would suddenly cool a little bit. And with that, being that the evaporator was exposed, then I could use my footprint. Line by line of the evaporator and find out where the temperature would suddenly change. And this indicated to me an obstruction, an artificial. One of the good ones that really able to fully chill the surface area of the vessel, because there was a clog inside there. And my theory is that the clog is going to wasn't hard enough, long enough, the clog would move, my cooling down for a while, and then it would leave me. So maybe that's what's happening to my Amana refrigerator. It also has the same Japanese compressor. It's a rotary compressor. You know, generally speaking, they're fine compressors, but back in the era when it was made, they had about a 25-year life expectancy max in refrigerators. And if you took care of them, you could have 35 years, but Laura's duty to clean the condenser monthly. She never did it, so it always had to suffer the added stress of high side pressure and higher amperage to the compressor motor and all that. So it's no wonder if I'm not in years early. Nowadays, I hear these refrigerators only last 7 to 10 years. Yeah, at least I have to get one from Russia where they don't understand flame obsolescence. At least that can be a washer, dryer, or refrigerator, it wouldn't last for months. So I have a presentation on that. It's called the Light Bulb Conspiracy. You actually make things fail early. So what do you think of that? If you didn't have this band, I'd like to get a Russian appliance playing here. Maybe I'd have to worry about the frequency. Maybe use 50 hertz over there. But usually you can get away with 10 hertz wiggle room, you know. And I don't know what their voltage is over there. But that's an idea. Of course, I still want to get my extra Svetlana, too. Okay, 7-3. It's been a pleasure. It's been fun. Maybe we can do that more often next time. Maybe my station will operate better, but we needed to do it. This is the first time ever I've spoken to you now on 3666 kilohertz, utilizing your handiwork, the pyramid antenna. N2IRJ, bye.
Okay, Marty, N2IRJ, WB4AIO. Well, you ought to try using only the Ameritron, because if you use only the Ameritron, it should produce the same amount of power as the other amplifier and consume a lot less electricity. Also, it would be a test to see if the Ameritron works all right when it's not hooked up to the other amplifier system. And if it works all right, then you know it's not an intermittent connection in the remote head or anything else. You know that it's somehow the interface to the other amplifier is the problem. That might be an interesting experiment. Right now I'm losing you, though. I didn't copy all of that transmission. There were parts where you faded down completely into the noise. But you did ask one question that I did hear, and that was where to buy a refrigerator. I think that Lowe's has pretty good selection of refrigerators, and also Best Buy also has a pretty good selection of refrigerators. So if you go to Lowe's or Best Buy, you will be confronted with many, many dozens of choices, I think, in the refrigerator department. So enjoy your shopping and enjoy the beautiful spring day. N2IRJ 73, and good luck in the contest. WB4 Aeschylus Icarus Oedipus, that's AIO, saying bye-bye.
Lowe's and Best Buy might be in my future. I will perform the Ameritron test. It's logical to do so. However, there is an undisputed problem
and that is just cutting out. With the light going off, it just goes completely dead, the control head. So there is something wrong there to boot. If there's that trouble, it's probably...